The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to episode 24 of Gotham Undercover. I am Karen.
And I'm Jeff.
And we're going to talk about episode 2 of season 2. Episode 2 of season 2, Knock Knock. You can find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by just searching for Gotham Undercover. Although you've probably found us already if you're listening, right?
Exactly. So the title of this episode was called Knock Knock. The writer of the episode was Ken Woodruff from The Mentalist and directed by Rob Bailey, who's done work on The Wire, CSI New York, and Criminal Minds.
Some good background there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed CSI New York. So
yeah, he's actually one of the main showrunners behind CSI New York. So that's cool. Yeah. And the person that created Gotham also created The Mentalist. So Ken.
Oh, okay.
Ken and I can't remember the guy's name who created Gotham. You know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Nudge, nudge. They work together a lot. Let's put it that way. I knew his name when I started. Let's start off with our ratings for the episode.
Okay. I give it 7 smoked kippers.
Very nice. Smoked kippers. And I give it, in what was one of the craziest scenes in the episode, 8 chainsaw sword fights.
Indeed. Indeed. That was a crazy scene.
It was. Whew. And they also played a bit of Russian roulette in that same scene. Almost solo Russian roulette.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about this before. I've really got an issue with this being an 8 o'clock show because of some of the themes on there. But to me, having Russian roulette on the screen at an 8 o'clock show is just wild and crazy, and mm-hmm. and it's a little dark for me. But you know, I see where they're going with this storyline and the craziness of the maniacs, but it was crazy.
It is kind of the Joker, and
yeah,
it was a mirror to the references to smoking guns in the Bruce storyline as well.
Mm.
If you realize they were mentioning guns and the fact that guns are super important in the Batman storyline, in the mythos, that Bruce just refuses to use guns because of his parents' murder, and the fact that Joker just is not afraid of them at all.
No, not whatsoever.
Right. And I found that to be kind of a mirror, that it was very subtly mirrored in that storyline as well. So, so let's talk about each little storyline. And I have written a little summary. I'm hoping it's not a recap. Wink, wink, Daryl. the main story, I think, and there's two kind of main stories, but I'm going to start with the one between Bruce and Alfred. Bruce is trying to forge ahead after deciding he does have the true calling his father wrote about. Before he can find out anything, Alfred destroys Dr. Wayne's computer. I did not see that coming. Bruce fires him and he leaves the mansion. Eventually, Bruce goes to him before he can leave Gotham. Alfred is contrite and Bruce asks him if he can use his experience to guide him and fix the computer since he broke it in the first place. Alfred kills two birds with one stone by going to Lucius, knowing he's the one that set Bruce on this mission, and he persuades him to join their team and also to fix the computer.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this storyline. I think you saw just how involved Thomas Wayne was in just fighting the corruption. Mm-hmm. And it just really surprised me, the visuals that we got and were described with the blood in the refrigerator, the bulletproof vest with two bullets in it, the weapons laying all around. And you see all those things, and you see all that does to Bruce is just cause him to be more driven to find out what was going on. Mm-hmm. And it has the exact opposite effect on Alfred. I mean, Alfred didn't know that that place existed, and he sees what kind of effect it's having on Bruce, and he's like, I've got to stop this.
Yeah.
Not realizing who Bruce is at this point, and not realizing that Bruce has the guts to fire him. But it was really cool to see the contrast between the proto Batcave computer and the computers at the paper in the beginning scene.
Right. With the big CRTs.
Right. I mean, it was like, okay. I mean, you know, we find out Lucius built these things. So we know that they're cutting edge tech, but I mean, I'm like, okay, that's major differences there. But, you know, I really enjoyed this storyline. I love the interactions between the two. You know, Alfred was trying to get through to Bruce, but Bruce is just, he's a different type of boy from everybody else, and the normal things just aren't going to work on him. And he really, Alfred had to basically turn it back around on him and said, okay, if you want the training, then you're going to have to let me be in control and call the shots. And so at least have some control that way. It was just interesting to see that way, the way it worked out between the two of them.
I agree. And there were definitely different emotions running through both of these characters in this episode. Mm-hmm. You could see that Alfred was almost terrified when he was down in that cave with Bruce, when he sees all those things, how much danger Dr. Wayne had put himself in, and he wasn't right. aware of it at all. And you could see that Alfred and he were friends,
mm-hmm.
You know, very close, and he had no idea that all this was going on. So he's more than terrified for Bruce, and he still thinks of Bruce as kind of this ersatz son at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't really think of him as being a partner yet.
No.
And they're not at that point. I mean, there's no way they're at that point yet. He wants to be that guardian still. And so it should be. I mean, Bruce isn't ready to be a partner. He needs training. There's no way around that. He's not ready to step into the bat suit yet. But, you know, destroying the computer wasn't the way to go.
No.
Information is power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean Bruce would have used that power correctly, but Alfred could have steered him after he discovered whatever on the computer.
Right.
So there's that. Yet,
the thing about the dynamic between the two of them is I just see it. I see Bruce learning from Alfred and then going on to, you know, model that differently, but with his Robins. You see that dynamic there where instead of being more of a hindrance, he's saying, okay, you've gone through this, I'm going to help you. And so he kind of takes that, what he learned from Alfred, and kind of adapts that to say, okay, I'm going to do things a little bit different. But I thought of this storyline is Bruce is building his allies.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce has Jim, somewhat. He's got Alfred now, and now, thanks to Alfred, he's got Lucius.
Right.
That storyline was really interesting. I loved how Alfred kind of talked.
Yeah.
Very
Cockney.
Yeah. But he did it in a very smart way and a very cool way, but he did it in a way that didn't talk down to Lucius.
Right.
But kind of laid down how it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But then we found out how much respect and even love that Lucius had for Thomas, and you know that he didn't know what was going on. But now that he knows what's going on, I think he's going to be more willing to help Bruce than he was Thomas, because he kind of feels a debt there. So it was just to see the Team Batman being built even in these early stages was very cool to see.
Right. Do you think we're ready to call that the Batcave yet?
I don't know. I think they're going to actually discover the cave in the process. So that's going to be like their
Sorry. I got to use that every week.
Yeah, they're going to be fumbling around in there and fall through and actually find the Batcave. But I think that's going to be the first step, you know. So he's starting there, and then he'll move more fully into the Batcave later.
Yeah. So I guess for now we should just call them Team Bruce.
Sure.
I guess. Yeah, I really do think that's going to become a very tight, cohesive team, and I think they're going to make a very well-rounded Bruce. Alfred has some serious skills,
mm-hmm.
and then we know Lucius is a genius, a tech
right.
genius, and I'm sure he knows other things, not just technology-wise, but we could see that Thomas relied on him very much within the company, so he has some other smarts as well. And I do think he feels like if he had stepped in sooner, he could have saved Thomas.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's that. And now he's stepping in very early to make sure that Bruce stays safe. So,
yeah
I think that's a very wise move on his part.
So, yeah, they've got a lot to teach him and offer him. And I think he's going to respect the gifts and the talents that they have and foster those things within him, and then for him to also realize that he can't do it alone. You know, mm-hmm. Even if he's the point man, that he's got to have a backup team. He can't do it on his own. He looks back and see his father and kind of sees the consequences of nobody knowing the full story and being there to support.
Right. And that is Batman. I mean, he is the hero that always remembers he has a team. He never takes Alfred or Batman or Batgirl or whoever's on his team for granted.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I like about him, is he never tries to go alone. If he needs help, he goes to whoever he thinks can help him. I really like that about his character. I don't like I don't need help.
Yeah.
Sort of hero, because that implies weakness. That they think that shows no weakness, but it really is a major weakness. It's a huge
right.
flaw. And going to Commissioner Gordon as well later on is a big, big strength in his case, working alongside the police department.
Right.
So I think he's also part of Team Bruce already. At this point. And there's a little bit in the preview clip, which I have posted on our Facebook page, where he kind of, he talks to Lee a little bit, and it's, he talks about James, but he kind of hits on Lee a little bit, which is very cute. And that actor is amazing as Bruce.
Yeah, he does a very good job playing such a weighty character.
Mm-hmm.
He does a really good job in portraying the emotions and the thoughts behind stuff.
Yeah, so good. And you can just see the different sides of Batman already coming out. And mm-hmm. and that takes a lot. And that very young actor is really doing a good job in bringing that out.
Yeah.
All right. So next storyline. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. So next storyline. This is the one that's a little heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Essen announces her intention to fight the maniacs with full force, putting Gordon on lead. Theo sets his master plan in motion, which we're still not clued into. I'm guessing, and you can chime in here before I'm done even with the summary, if you like. I'm thinking it might be a mayoral run since he's kidnapped the mayor.
Well, here's my thoughts. There's big talks about, and the producers have kind of confirmed that this season is going to have a Court of Owls storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if he necessarily will be the one who is a mayoral candidate. I think I still see him as somebody behind the scenes and pushing those people into place, both that position and the commissioner's position.
Okay.
Because we've got this commissioner who was set on, you know, bringing the new day and fighting, immediately taking out. So I'm still saying that he's going to be in the background and the other people will take those public faces. But that's okay. My thoughts.
So he's going to be the chess player.
Right.
And just moving the pieces on the board. Do you think Michael Chiklis' character, who's going to be in the next episode, do you think he's going to be part of that scheme? Or do you think he's going to be a good guy?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. Yeah. I have no clue. It will be interesting to see where the story goes. I'm not sure at this point.
Me too. But he's going to be on next week's episode, just a little bloop in here. Okay, so we still don't know what his major plan is, but he's doing it by starting it by keeping the mayor out of commission and guiding his team of misfits in making headlines with some brutal crimes. And they are, number one, they threw shipyard workers off the paper's roof, spelling out maniacs, ! And that's important because they were spray painted on these people, including the exclamation point. And that was pretty graphic.
Yes.
However, it paled in comparison to some of the other stuff that happened. They tried to set a busload of cheerleaders on fire, which it was horrific, but not so graphic because James came in and saved the day and drove the bus away from the fire.
Mm-hmm.
We lost one of the maniacs in that part of the episode because he got caught and Tigress took him out before he could spill anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the third crime was the police station massacre, resulting in the death, the very quick death of Sarah Essen. Bullock returns because of all the lost lives in the police massacre. And by the end of the episode, the maniacs are down to Jerome, Barbara, and Aaron, who is amygdala. So craziness, right?
Yeah. So the interesting thing that I see here is he said in his little round table meeting with the maniacs there that he's pushing chaos on Gotham so that they can come in and be the savior. You know, I'm assuming that's going to be the Court of the Owls who are going to take over, but
right. He says that, man, to the mayor too.
Right. And yeah. The guy knows PR. He's right there at the paper. He's pulling the cheerleaders. He's going to the police. He knows where to strike people to get them riled up. And I mean, even the maniacs, uniforms they're wearing straight jackets. They're wearing them actually forward so that they can actually, you know, move their arms. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it just shows the PR there. And then he gives them a little audition to be the spokesman of the group. And of course, Jerome, Mr. Raised in the Circus, pulls his ringmaster kind of, you know, stunt and does it perfectly.
Yep.
And we have this fight to see who's the real leader that we talked about earlier, but he just shines.
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
Jerome,
that's his
just
thing.
Shines.
Yep.
And, you know, we've said this before, but the actor that plays him is excellent. You know, I've seen, you know, somebody say that he's playing kind of a mix of Nicholson and Ledger in there, but he really makes the Joker character. And, you know, it was funny when he was talking with Essen, I got a whole Agent Smith vibe when he was mm-hmm. talking to her and, you know, talking
Agreed.
About how, you know, the virus and that kind of stuff. And it was just supreme acting on his part. And, you know, they are striking that fear. But Theo is smart. He's got his sister being Overwatch on each of their endeavors. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got her on that other rooftop so that she's got firing solution on them if they don't go through with dropping the people off the roof ledge. He's got her on the rooftop, and, you know, just as one of the guys is about to spill his guts, she takes him out.
Yep.
You know, I'm sure he had her there in the other place. So he's like, he's letting them go, but he's not trusting them. He's
yeah.
got oversight. He's not going to let anybody tie it back to him. So mm-hmm. like I said, he's an orchestrator, a chess master, and he does it very well. And he knows how to play it. And it just shows. I think this storyline was brutal and it was hard. I really saw the parallels to, you know, some of the stuff in the comics and the movies that have done before of pushing chaos and trying to cause things to go off the rail so something new can come. But he's doing an excellent job on, you know, masterminding it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. While it was difficult to see the scenes in the police station, mm-hmm. I think there was definitely a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree, 8 o'clock is early. It really is early. Someone did make a point on our Facebook page that parents should be patrolling.
Oh, I agree. I agree on that,
yeah.
that half. And, you know, being Gotham, it's going to be a darker
story. Dark. Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, looking at even just the titles, you
right.
know, when the titles roll, it's just all blackness. So, yeah, it's going to be dark. And when is it going to be not he's playing a cross between this and this? And yes, I get that. Yeah, it's reminiscent of this performance or that performance, but
he's making it his own. Yeah.
Yeah, he's making it his own, but he's also playing the Joker.
Yeah.
It's just the Joker. And every actor who's played the Joker has taken that character and played the character. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not faulting you for saying that. I agree. People are comparing him to all the actors that
mm-hmm.
have gone before. I would like to see people judge him based on his take on the character.
Right.
And I think his take on the character is really good.
Yeah.
People are still wondering if he's playing the Joker, and I think the showrunners have already confirmed he's the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not even going to wonder about it. I think
yeah.
that's his deal.
Well, yeah, and the characters, they make them their own, and so much so that, to me, Michael Rosenbaum is Lex Luthor.
I agree.
Thanks to Smallville.
Yes, I agree.
So he's making it his own, and he does a perfectly good job at it. And the other big person in that scene is Barbara,
mm-hmm.
because she's calling from inside the station. I mean, she calls
right.
Bruce up and he realizes she's calling from inside the station. She distracts him, runs him out,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they get into this discussion. I love the costuming because she's wearing this, like, light trench coat and these blood red gloves.
I'm glad it's you like, brought that up.
It's like she's, you know, got blood on her hands, but yet she's prepared to keep it off of her somewhat. And you contrast that with Leslie, who's wearing all white, and Essen's wearing white, and she's killed. So you got all these ladies in white and in Bruce's life. And she is one of those characters where people are saying, okay, is she going to be Harley Quinn? Is she going to be whoever? And, you know, no, I think they're going to make her be her own person. But I think she needs, a villain name, you know. Mm-hmm. That's just my opinion. But she played that scene very well. She said, I'm not sick, I'm free. Mm-hmm. And she just relished it. The one kind of issue that I had with this maniacs group is, where are they recruiting people from? Because one was killed off earlier in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron was out in the courtyard.
He's still with them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But inside the station, there was Jerome and three others. So.
They have henchmen probably.
Yeah.
From the jail.
I guess so. Because, I mean, they kept spouting in the episode about this many escaped from Arkham, and yet. But, you know, like I said, that was my only hang up that we're seeing that people were getting added. But, man, her scene.
He has
scene
his leadership, and then he has, like, henchmen.
Right.
There's always
henchmen. Yeah.
Can't be Batman without a henchman. Well, I'm glad you brought up her outfit, because I agree that it's like the blood on her hands and the whiteness of her jacket and all that.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the fact that, and I know she's not going to be Harley Quinn, I'm not implying that, but it was very Harley Quinn-esque that she had the gloves on and that she leans down and kisses James and has the blood on her mouth like mm-hmm. Harley Quinn does to make herself look like Joker. And it almost tells me that they're going to make her into that type of character. You know, mm-hmm. like they're hinting at it, saying, oh, she's going to go crazy, and she and Joker are going to be best buds.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're going to make her into Harley Quinn, because, you know, that would be the ultimate cougar relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be a little too much. So, but I do think that they're going to be that two sides of a coin thing, but almost like one side of a coin. I think they're both the same amount of crazy.
Yeah.
And I really do think they're leaning in that direction by hinting, hey, she's going to be our Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
Harley's,
I can see that.
Harley's not here in this Gotham right now, because mm-hmm. Joker's not all growed up yet.
Yeah.
So let's make Barbara his first Harley Quinn. And I'm thinking that if they do kill Barbara off this season, that he will, that the reason he will take to Harley Quinn so easily is because he fondly remembers Barbara.
I can see that. I can see that.
So, you know, that's kind of my theory on it, is that, you know, she's becoming this Harley type character so that he gravitates towards this type of woman in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So just my thought. And I'm thinking the writers are kind of nudging us into thinking she's becoming that type of character. So just my thought. I mean, the gloves are very much in the mindset of a Harley Quinn. The colors of her outfit and the blood on her mouth as she kisses James. And the reason they leave him alive is, of course, because they need that mouthpiece in the precinct. And they know that Barbara can get to him. You know, Theo earlier in the episode was quizzing her on her knowledge of Gordon.
Yeah.
So he feels like he can use him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, does Theo know about the Penguin? I mean, is there a tie there?
I don't know. I don't know that he necessarily knows Jim's tie with the Penguin. that got him back in place. If he knows that, he's seeing that, you know, as not the best way to deal with Jim to go that way, mm-hmm. but to go with Barbara, because he would be more likely to do that than go with the Penguin, because he, you know, even at his core regrets that sure. thing that he had to do to get there. So I think, you know, even if he knows, he thinks that Barbara is the better method to go after her, yep. After him.
Agreed. He's going to get pulled in all kinds of directions.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, I know the show's called Gotham, and it's supposedly, and it's not a Batman, and I'm doing air quotes, Batman show, but I really do think this is the story of James Gordon. And kind of the backstory of the regular characters, but it's, you know, it's the origin story of Commissioner Gordon,
mm-hmm.
because we're really seeing it through his eyes. And
right.
he is such a tortured character. You can see if this was his real origin, which I am liking it personally. I can see where he becomes the man that he does, where he just has to fall in with Batman. Because that is the better of all the evils of Gotham.
Right, right. He's had all that experience, and he can see the merit in helping Batman out, and knowing the flaws in the system, and knowing that Batman can work around those flaws and do things that he would like to but can't.
Right. Right. Knowing that going off book is the worst thing he can do, but Batman can do that.
Right.
And that's his out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Such, really, that storyline was graphic and jarring, but it really does show what Gotham's about, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and you really see the setup of the chaos that Theo is setting about, you know, mm-hmm. he's just bringing it to him.
James Vrain.
Yeah.
Man. He is crazy good.
Yeah, yeah.
His American accent's pretty good, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then a tiny little side story. Ed Nygma is fighting with himself again in this episode, and he's trying to ask out Kris Kringle, his Riddler side. And I do think that's his Riddler side, his more confident side. I guess maybe it's his more confident side, and then it's his weaker side, and they're both going to merge to be the Riddler, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I can see.
Okay, so his more confident side is razzing him and saying, you'll never be able to ask her out. That's me that she'll be attracted to. So he's, you know, his more confident side is pushing him to ask her out. But he can't work it up to ask her out. He saves her from a bullet during the massacre, and he takes one himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he does end up asking her out.
Well, and the thing about it is she comes in to the file room, and you can tell she would be open to being asked out.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems that way. And you're just like, oh.
I think she would be.
Yeah, yeah. Then he kind of fails. And then we see that this event further pushes it. And,
mm-hmm.
and he, you know, his actions rather than his words, you know, lead to him getting that date.
Right. Yeah. At first, it's the inaction. That leads to him seeing his other side. And then it's his action that leads to him getting the date. And I'm wondering if he thinks his action is due to that other side.
Yeah, that's an interesting theory. I think I said last week that the two sides of himself are going to be at war and then get put back together and being that, you know, that Joker. I mean, the
Riddler. Yeah, I know.
I did that last week. But anyway,
I know.
But I think he's always going to question it until he's of one mind.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to question.
He's still going to be off the rails.
I mean, right, one true, mind.
Yeah, but still off kilter.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if you noticed, but it's very subtle in this episode, but when they go kind of campy, and it happened also in last week's episode when they were in Arkham, just very slightly, they tip the camera when it goes campy. And it seems to be kind of a hint that they're doing a nod and a wink to the 60s version of the show. Because, you know, they tilted the camera in the 60s version of the show. I just thought I'd bring that up.
That's interesting. I was focused on other things. And sometimes I catch those and sometimes I don't. You know, I minored in film. So sometimes when I'm watching the first time, I will just get the story. And then the second time, I may get some of those stuff, but that's interesting. I'll have to watch out for that
it
more.
Is
you know, I didn't
so
catch that.
Subtle.
Yeah.
When they are in the alley, it is a very strange camera angle.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And I notice whenever they're doing something kind of campy, which that scene is quite campy, where she kind of laughs and kisses him. It's always at a very strange camera angle. So I'm going to keep watching for those, I think.
I'll try to...
is kind of not looking exactly on point or, you know, just something a little off in the scene when it's... I don't know if they're doing that on purpose, but it just seems to me that whenever it's almost winking at the 60s series, and I consider those Arkham outfits kind of a nod to the 60s series.
Right. They can't really do straight out camp, but they can throw those little things in.
Right. And so I'm hoping at least that's what they were aiming for. But yeah, I kind of think that was cool. Anything else to add?
Not right offhand.
Okay, same here. Pretty good episode though. I think they're really off to a good start this season. I love the villains thing.
Yeah. You know, the only reason I marked it down was because of the violence. But, like I said, it's the strong acting and the storylines that are stronger this year, more focused, that are making it a little more compelling than last season.
I agree, definitely. And we have another feedback for this episode. Play that. Feedback. It's from Justina again. And she says, "Hi, Karen and Jeff." Hi, Justina.
Hey.
We usually say hi, Justina. Last week was the first week of Gotham Undercover together. And it was so awesome, all in caps, that it
Thank
was
you.
As if you had both been podcasting together for years.
Wow.
I give this episode 7 beautiful, painful distractions because Barbara is beautiful and caused pain for Jim this episode. Understatement, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love the relationship between Bruce and Alfred. In the pilot last year, when Bruce runs to Alfred after his parents are shot, Alfred looks lost. Now he is violently destroying a computer that he perceives as a threat to Bruce, just as a father would, and their fight felt very parent versus child as well. My favorite scene was with Jerome. The way they shot that scene and kept zooming into his mouth and his smile, that iconic Joker smile. Will Jim be commissioner now? I know that is his comic destiny, but I wasn't expecting it to be now. Have a super week, Justina. I'm assuming someone else will step into that role for now.
Yeah, I believe so too.
I don't know who.
I don't know. I think that's a little too early in the storyline for it to happen. Just looking at the comics and other things, I'm not sure if it's who's going to be that position, but I think it's not going to be Jim yet. He's not ready yet.
Yeah, I don't know though. I mean, we know Michael Chiklis will be in next week's episode. It says Sarah Essen will be in next week's episode, and I know they released the press release before Knock Knock aired, so I'm assuming they put her in so as not to spoil the fact that she dies.
Right.
But if she is in it, it would be a flashback, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no idea who is going to be commissioner. We may not even see it next week. I don't know. So, but I don't think it'll be Jim yet.
No.
I think that may come later. But he is definitely not ready for that job. He's still detecting in this case. I don't think he would accept it yet.
No, and, you know, I really, one of the things we didn't talk about earlier, but I loved the scene with Bullock at the bar where he's happy in that life. He's engaged, and Scotty's there's like backing him up, saying, no, he's not coming back. But
not
he
really
can't.
Backing him up, just.
Yeah, well, and, but.
You're not going back.
But he won't let Jim leave without giving him a tip.
Right.
You know, have you thought about checking out the shipping yard? Mm-hmm. And I think Jim still thinks that he's got a lot to learn, and he's still trying to wade through it all. So I don't think he's ready, but he's learning.
I agree. And with this case still open, I think he would not step up.
Yeah.
I think he'd say, I have to stay where I am.
Right.
So, yeah, there's that. So, that's it for our feedback. How can they reach us, Jeff?
Well, you can leave us feedback by calling the feedback line at 304-837-2278 or going to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. There you can leave text, audio files, or leave a spoken message using your computer with the SpeakPipe widget. You can leave us Twitter feedback on Gotham GSM or find us in the Facebook group and leave some feedback there.
Or on iTunes.
Yes, please. Give us a review and a rating, please.
Yes. Also, we have a page. If you go to goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes, it'll take you right to iTunes, and it'll show you all of our podcasts, and we're all there. So we have so many things happening.
Yeah.
The Blacklist Exposed is about to start off their award-nominated podcast, as well as the Arrow podcast with their award-nominated podcast. I won't be starting Supergirl for a few weeks yet. But there's that as well. What else is happening? Oh, Fear the Walking Dead is just about to end its run, but they will be starting their Walking Dead coverage in a couple of weeks. So there's that.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff happening.
Yeah. The great thing is if there is a TV show that you like, there's probably a podcast on GSM about it.
Probably.
And there's some great hosts on there. And, we encourage you to check out the podcast. They're great hosts. They're passionate about their podcast and about the shows. And just go and try it. And I also encourage you to check out Stuff I Learned Yesterday, a great podcast that comes out 3 days a week and gives you, you know, some inspiration for your day. It's a great one. So check that one out as well.
Agreed. All right. So... the next thing I have is the press release for next week's episode, and I'll read that now. It's not very spoilery, so you probably won't have to go somewhere, but if you don't want to be spoiled at all, you can leave now, and you're safe. Here we go. Abracadabra hostages on an all-new Gotham, Monday, October 5th on Fox. I put my hands up in the air. That's the worst, right? Gordon and Bullock track down a nemesis from the past, leading to a standoff between Jerome, guest star Cameron Monaghan, and Gordon. Meanwhile, a magic show at Gotham's Children's Hospital gala turns into a hostage situation in the all-new Rise of the Villains, The Last Laugh episode of Gotham, airing Monday, October 5th, 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox. And again, it's the first episode with guest star Michael Chiklis as Detective Nathaniel Barnes.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see the havoc that ensues there. So,
In the little clip that I posted, Alfred, Bruce, and Lee are all at this gala. I don't know who else is there, but they are definitely there. And Alfred is very fixated on the fact that there is a magician there. He mentions it like 3 or 4 times. He says to Bruce, your parents were patrons of the children's hospital, so that means you're a patron. And there's also a magician here. And Bruce says, I don't like magicians. And he says, yes, you do. You like magicians. And then Lee comes over and says something to them. And Bruce says, can I get you a drink? Like Mr. Smooth, he offers to go get Lee a drink. And Lee says, a water, please. And he runs off to get her a drink. And then Alfred turns to Lee and says, so I hear there's a magician here. He's all excited. I don't know what it is about magicians. I keep saying musicians.
Who knows? Maybe, you know, it's probably a novelty. He didn't probably get to see many when he was growing up. So,
yeah, maybe.
Who knows?
It's interesting. I can't wait to find out what happens. But the clip is very cute.
And yeah.
He's such a player already at such a young age, Bruce. May I get you a drink? I mean,
yeah.
And he asks about Detective Gordon, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, on a side note, we talked about last episode how the on-screen romance is off-screen romance. And
oh, yeah, Ben and Morena.
Yeah, and she's said that she's very happy with having, you know, the steady TV work, and TV work is more conducive for raising a family, so hopefully we'll get to see the two of them together for many seasons to get ahead.
Yeah, let's hope so. Plus they're getting married now.
Yeah, I just saw that the other day. I was like, okay, well, good for them.
Yeah, not on the show.
Yeah.
I just wanted
yeah.
that to be yeah. known. They're getting married in real life. So that is amazing. I mean, I thought it was cool when it happened on Once Upon a Time. That Charming and Snow White got married in real life and had a baby. But I wasn't expecting this because they don't look like a couple to me in real life.
Yeah.
And now that they are, I can see it because right. their chemistry is so good on screen. But it's so adorable. And in this episode, you know, he comes into the morgue and he says, I love you. And she goes, back at you, or something, you know, or ditto, or
something like that.
It's
yeah,
it's very
like,
cute.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So that's really nice. I guess that's it for this week. And I have so much fun doing this with you, Jeff.
Yeah, it's awesome. And, you know, we get to discuss it and hang out, and we want you involved. So please do leave us feedback. Please get involved. We want to know your thoughts on the season. We want you involved in the podcast. We would love to hear you rather than just read your feedback. So please leave us some audio feedback because we want your voices to be a part of this community.
Right. Who wants to hear me talk?
Or me.
Right. Actually, we like to hear you talk when you send in feedback.
Yeah, yeah. So
you were a great feedbacker.
Yeah, well, it took a while.
All right.
So you can do it too. You
That's
know, you
right.
can be brave. Just make that step and, you know, record that message.
That's right. I hated talking on microphone for the longest time. And now look at me. I'm all over the place. So maybe that's a bad thing. I don't know. Okay, so we'll talk to you next week where we'll be talking about The Last Laugh. And we'll see you then. So bye, everyone.
Bye.